Joining us live in studio, always a pleasure to have with us Senator Perry Dozier from the 16th. Walla Walla, good afternoon to you, sir. Thanks for coming by.
Hey, this is fantastic. I was able to drop by on my way back to the sane side of the state, so glad to be in person today.
So brought the sunshine.
Let's talk about sane versus maybe slightly less than. And I'm curious about this because many of us had the chance to read the House bill that dealt with police pursuits and saw within that House bill that it would give law enforcement, they would still have the ability to pursue for DUI on reasonable suspicion. It would add to the equation the committing of a violent offense, committing of a sexual offense, first, second, third, and fourth degree domestic violence. Also, if someone was an escapee, police would have the ability to reasonably pursue. So it would have added, I believe, a total of five to the already existing DUI ability to pursue.
Right.
House doesn't bring it to the floor after it passes committee on procedural. So we're thinking, okay, well, this is going to be done until next year. And then all of a sudden, your chamber, the Senate, decides to turn around and say, hold my beer. And the bill that didn't even get out of the committee all of a sudden gets given to Senator Monica Dingra, who takes whatever highlighter she decided she wanted to use.
Crayon.
Writes it up in her image and what she wants to see. And then this thing passes the Senate. So I want to ask you, what are the differences between, because we heard that it is very, very scaled back. So there are a couple of things in there that police have the ability to pursue on reasonable suspicion. So how much difference is it between what the House bill was going to give and what passed through the Senate?
Well, I can't exactly talk to you on the House bill. I know that on the Senate bill, it was strong. It was a strong bill. We were getting a lot of things back into this bill that we needed. I think Senator Dingra's striking amendment was like a thank you very much. We're going to bring it up to another level, but we're going to miss some of the very important aspects that need to be in this bill. And so that's where we approach it. I mean, I was totally surprised. You know, we're getting to the last day. We all thought this thing was dead. And we go in on that last day, and then we hear they're going to hear the bill. And I sit down, I look at her striking amendment, and I go, okay, we've got these other amendments we're going to add to it. Two of the big amendments that really needed to be in this bill were that they could pursue if it was car theft. And car thefts have increased. We have gone, we're up to 45,000 car thefts a year right now. Our last high, I believe, was in 2016 at 30,000. That was the last high. Right now, these people will steal and go take off, and we cannot pursue them. And when you look at that, there is no recourse for our officers. The other one, and this was very, very timely for us to talk about on the Senate floor, was the pursuit of reckless driving. Obviously, we all know about the incident that happened last week in Sunnyside, where that vehicle was driving recklessly at over 100 miles an hour going through Thorpe. I spoke about this on the Senate floor. Rob, I said, you know, I drive this route almost every weekend. It's not like you're in downtown on the I-5 corridor screaming, and you couldn't get 100 miles an hour anyway. You're lucky sometimes if you get 10.
Right.
But there was the option for these officers to engage. Instead, it cost the lives of two young children. And the thing that is so disheartening is, as I said, is, you know, these officers that had to pull back found out, what, 2-3 hours later that somebody, two children had been killed. And because of the law that was passed 2 years ago, they could not pursue.
They don't want to hear that. And this is the part that is infuriating because, you know, John and I will talk about this stuff. And, you know, we both look at it from a different perspective. You know, we look at it from a perspective of public safety. We look at it from a perspective of what we believe to be common sense.
Mm-hmm.
We know not everybody, you know, prescribes to the same definition of common sense. But this, to me, screams more of driving an agenda than common sense, because you can't sit there with a straight face, take absolutely garbage data from a garbage study that took 18 months of nothing into consideration, and completely ignored the other side of the statistical argument, which is what Senator Dinger did with her garbage study.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be the one to say that. I won't ask you to concur with that. But as all of the excuses that were being given to not give police the ability to pursue, all I'm sitting there and thinking is, if their constituents were paying attention to this, would they still be in office? But it's obvious that they're not. Because any person that is a child, any person that lives in a community that has a level of congestion where people are crossing crosswalks, where you have people on the streets walking on a regular basis, can't in their right mind believe that allowing people to drive off, mm-hmm. committing criminal acts, is a benefit for their neighborhood.
No, and you know, the thing when I look at this is the prime sponsor of the Senate bill had put 31 years in law enforcement. And these people are highly trained in the job they do for us. And now this legislature, the majority of this legislature that is Democrat, have made the decision that they know more about how to direct what these officers should be doing, that they need more training, they aren't doing the right thing. So they're making a decision that I put my total faith in our law enforcement, because they are highly trained. Mm-hmm. They know they have to make a split second decision. If you're faced with somebody in a dark alley, they have to make a split second decision. I am not the one that has the ability to do that. If they're in a pursuit, they will know, they're trained to do that, when to pull off, when to save lives, and how to get other enforcement in.
Senator, I got to ask you this, because it ever since this kind of came out of nowhere, it's been on the back of my mind. I know that there was a rally on the Capitol steps at 1 o'clock. I believe it was yesterday afternoon or Wednesday afternoon.
It was Wednesday afternoon.
There was a rally, mm-hmm. on the steps regarding public safety and regarding the police pursuit. But considering how tone deaf many in the majority party have been to this issue, I can't imagine that rally all of a sudden spurred them on to believing that they needed to do something. So where else could this pressure have come? I know the governor hasn't been overly vocal, just saying, you know what, if something comes to my desk, I'll sign it. Haven't really heard the attorney general being overly vocal, but
mm-hmm.
just my understanding of how it works,
mm-hmm.
somebody had to have applied pressure to say this bill needs to get moved, and I don't think it was people on the steps of the Capitol at a rally.
No, it wasn't. I mean, because it was kind of, you know, as you know, it was the last minute, last day in the afternoon to pass this bill to bring it forward. I think there was probably, if you look at the, I can only talk about the Senate bill.
Right.
If you look at the fact that of the 16 sponsors on that bill, 9 were Democrats, 7 were Republicans on that Senate version of the bill. So there obviously was a lot of pressure on the Democrat side to move something forward. We thought maybe it was the House bill that would move forward, and the House bill died, and it didn't. So there must have been enough internal pressure to move it there. But, you know, without having a scheduled bill, this isn't like that I've heard before I was a legislator of the hairdressers that flooded the Capitol, mm-hmm. and got something done. had we known this was going to happen, I honestly believe you would have seen the people of this state over there on those steps putting that pressure on the left side to correct this problem that they brought forward.
You know, you mentioned nine of the sponsors were Democrats, and sometimes we forget there are Democrat reps and senators that come from smaller communities outside of Seattle. Do you sense internally, and they're like, okay, I'll never admit to this, but do you sense they see what's happening, but perhaps Dingra and some of the Leas and some of the 800-pound gorillas in the Senate are kind of like, you know, what Pelosi did in the House? They basically look at him and it's like, you're going to toe the line. Do you get any sense of that, or can you comment on that?
Well, you know, for me, it's a little difficult to talk about the internal mechanisms of the personalities, because when I got elected, I spent the first 2 years basically, I would say remote, but I was in my office in Olympia. I was on the floor, but it was with a small group of people. Of course, Senator Dingra was there all the time because of her leadership position. This is the first year I'm starting to build and know relationships of those. And what I see is there is a very strong group of that I would classify as probably way further left on the Democrat Party, that are, you know, sometimes you get a minority of people that have the biggest voice and it overrides common sense. And when we brought our amendments forward, we asked for a roll call vote on every single amendment. Every single one passed on a partisan vote. So we could not make this bill that was soft better than what it was, but soft better.
I have to say this, and I'm sorry, but I have to say this. And this is what bothers me about the state of things right now, is even the sponsors that brought the bill forward didn't have the cojones to vote in favor of an amendment to the bill that they wanted to see passed in the first place to make it a better bill or make it more like the bill that they wanted to see in the first place. But apparently they decided to put him in the jar on the way into the chamber so that they didn't cross anybody higher up on the party food chain. So if you're going to put a bill forward that you want your constituents to believe you want to make a difference and you want to go back to a better place for public safety, and then all of a sudden you go, whoops, nope, sorry, I was just kidding. I'm just going to get in line and vote and know my role in that regard.
Yeah, it was. I can tell you, I was very, very disappointed with the amendment votes. Definitely, without a doubt. I thought that we would see some of those nine senators look to make to put more teeth into this. In the end, I'll be honest with you, I this was a tough vote for me because I knew the bill needed to pass because it was better than not having it. I actually had gotten in touch with law enforcement over here before, when I knew it was going to that point. I got in touch with law enforcement over here to say, okay, this is where we're headed. I want to hear, because I represent this area, I want to hear from you what you think. And what I got was, even a little better is better, but it's not going to solve what we need done. So I voted against the bill. And the reason why I voted against the bill was because it was not doing what it needed to do. We left out car theft. We left out reckless driving. They would not have died. Now, had I needed to change my vote to pass the bill, I would have changed my vote. But in my heart, this was not the bill that we needed.
We're talking with Senator Perry Dozier from the 16th District of Walla Walla here on the Bottom Line, News Radio 610 KONA. Senator, take a quick time out. We'll come back with more. I don't know how much time you've got to spend with us. Hopefully you've got a shake, because there's a lot we want to talk about and get that firsthand perspective, because you've just kind of been you've been in the muck, and you don't really you don't smell so bad for being in it. So it must have been that drive and that nice Eastern Washington air that pulled it off of you with the windows down on a beautiful day like this. Back with more from Senator Perry Dozier on The Bottom Line. Back at The Bottom Line News Radio, 610 K1A, Friday afternoon. Rob Francis, John McKay with you. Reach out to Jason Hogage with American Family Insurance. Talk to him about your current policies. It may not be exactly what you're looking for. You may actually want somebody to take an outside view of those policies. Jason will do that for you. He'll let you know if they are really good and they're working the way they should, or if maybe you need something a little bit different. And with American Family Insurance, always tops when it comes to customer service. He'll let you know straight up what you need, what the right coverage for you is, and how it still can work within your budget. So reach out to Jason today through his website. Set up an appointment, jasonhogue.com. Auto insurance, life insurance, small business, farm, renter's insurance.
Auto theft insurance.
Well, they don't have that, unfortunately.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, it works right into you. It works right into everything else. But
yeah, you're going to want to get comp to cover your car in case, you know, with police can't chase bad guys. So you're going to want comp to cover your vehicle.
Reach out to Jason today through his website. Set up an appointment, jasonhogue.com. Senator Perry Dozier from the 16th District, Walla Walla, joining us here on the program this afternoon. Senator, there's a lot of bills that came through the Senate, a lot of bills that originated in the Senate that certainly have their share of controversy. So we're going to touch on a couple of those. We've got a couple minutes before we have to take another break. But I want to ask you a little bit about the debate that centered around, and I've got a couple of the numbers in my head. I don't know what exactly, but it was the bill that would allow minors to, I think it was $52.99, something like that. But
that sounds real familiar.
Yeah, it would allow minors to
run away,
go to havens,
a safe house,
and if they claim that they are there seeking reproductive health, then the facility does not have to contact the parents, does not have to tell them that the minor is there. What was the debate like on that bill?
That debate was basically pretty interesting in that I don't know if that they can go there, that they're going there to claim reproductive health. It's that they're going there to, how do I want to say, get away from their parents for some reason or another. But once they're there at that facility does not have to notify the parent that that child is there. And what we end up looking at is, what is this state doing letting these minors go out there and not, we're taking the parents out of raising our children. I don't care if it's in the K-12 system, which I see that a lot, because these children the schools don't have to notify parents about certain things with their children. So with this situation is, if they go there, it's not that they will have, let's say, gender reaffirming surgery, but they can, if they're expressing an issue that they have, they can get gender reaffirming, like puberty blockers, drugs and stuff, without the parents knowing. So one of the discussions we had is, what if you were a parent that your child took off and you think you have a runaway? I mean, you may have a decent relationship with your child and you don't realize that they are going that direction. And so you call law enforcement and say, my child's missing. Are they going to step up and contact you? And yeah.
Back with more with Senator Perry Dozier from the 16th Legislative District, Walla Walla, here on The Bottom Line News Radio, 610 K1A. We still have a few more bills to touch on. Of course, everybody's favorite topic lately, Second Amendment. So we'll hit on a couple of those with Senator Dozier when we come back on your Friday afternoon. Thanks for joining us. Back at The Bottom Line News Radio, 610 K1A. Sometimes a webcam in here would not be a good idea. Rob Francis, John McKay, Senator Perry Dozier from the 16th Legislative District, Walla Walla, joining us. And thanks to Senator Matt Behnke from the 8th. It was Bill 5599 that we were talking about. Not $52.99. We were pulling out of there. We got close. We were one number off, but we would not have won the grand prize on the game show.
Nobody wins the grand prize with that.
No, nobody does. Nobody does. So thanks to Senator Benke for passing us the proper bill number on that $155.99. So, and again, that forum, by the way, tomorrow, 8th Legislative District, Arc of the Tri-Cities, 2 o'clock.
Fowler, Richland.
In Richland. Fowler and Richland. Representatives Connors and Barnard and Senator Benke will be there answering your questions about the session up to this date. I know the 9th is doing a telephone town hall. So now I'm going to ask you, Senator Dozier, what's the 16th got planned?
You know, thank you very much. I just actually asked my two counterparts, Representative Rood and Representative Clicker. I said, we need to get something done here because we're getting behind the ball. So
I've got a great idea.
Talk to me.
Well, the three of you just come in here.
That would be fantastic.
We got plenty of microphones.
I think we ought to try to do that. You know what? I'm going to get back in touch with them. Well, we got a little bit of a break here as we hit the we're a little bit past the halfway point. I think we got like 43 days or something left. So, you know, we're getting there.
We'll just call it the state of the 16th and boom.
Okay.
Roll.
Okay. You know what the really good part is I mean, we got great representation here with the Tri-Cities. You get three legislative districts.
Oh, hey, believe me. We did, you know, so it's funny you bring that up. We did that. I think the only one that is still in office from that, Representative Schmick. Actually, the 9th is still, because we did it, I think it was Representative Dye's first term. It was Representative Benke at the time. We did it at CBC where we had. We had the 8th, the 9th, and the 16th at CBC, and we did a forum for 2 hours with all the reps and senators at that point. So
you know, that would be good. Unfortunately, the 9th moved a little bit further north.
But, it did.
We've got some really good representation. I got to tell you that for the Tri-Cities. I'm excited with the new ones we got.
What is missing in the message to the rural counties on the west side? There are agriculture counties on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as much as there is here, but there are counties on the west side where there are farmers. I mean, former Senator Tim Shelton.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand why there is this disconnect between the agriculture community on the east side and the agriculture community on the west side. Because they're trying to kill your industry.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to kill. I mean, they think food grows in cans on the Safeway shelf.
Mm-hmm.
It's ludicrous to me how little they understand about agriculture and where the food comes from. What is the disconnect with ag on the west side of the state? And what's happening? Why don't they see what's happening and change their representation? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not just ag. It's ag and natural resources, because those are the two things that are very strong. So we have a very, very good senator that represents, I think it's maybe the 10th district, in Ron Mazzal. He is a farmer. He is phenomenal. He can talk the issues, and he's up there in the islands. And I think it's Whidbey Islands where he's at.
Woke Harbor,
yes,
that
he
area,
is
yeah.
phenomenal at bringing that message across. We get to Southwest Washington. We really don't have anybody connected exactly with agriculture, but it's a messaging that we need to do. It's a natural resources in that area that also Inslee is attacking with, and the Democrat Party is attacking with their legislation. I mean, let's just look at what cap and tax did to us. I mean, mm-hmm. we talk about that. That is devastating, even up into Whatcom County, with what they're paying there for the refineries. You go into these other industries down in Southwest Washington.
The logging and other resources.
We are getting beat up with this legislation, but it's a messaging that we have to get out there, and we have to get these people to get rallied to finally see that the direction the Democrat Party is taking us is the wrong road to take.
Here's what's fascinating. San Juan County is approaching $5.90 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
They are the highest in the state, hands down. Wakayakum is number two, and they're about 20 cents lower. than San Juan County. But you're going to be hitting $6 a gallon in Washington State, mm-hmm. not because of the oil companies, but because of cap and tax.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because of the auctions, because of the other things that are going to be coming in and rolling their way in here in the next couple of months that were done, that the governor walked back his promise to the tribes.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things that are coming, there's only so much that you could take out of somebody's pocket before, and Washington State could be the first state that doesn't have a middle class anymore at the rate we're going.
Look at what the cost of those credits were.
$48.
Yes. Yeah. You look at what California was and everything. Where do you think these industries are going to make it up?
Yeah. And
are, you said it perfect just a little bit ago, Rob. There will not be a middle class. There will be an upper class, and we will be gone as a middle class if yeah. this keeps up, because it's a middle class that continues to pay for some of the policy that is passed by the majority party.
But see, here's the thing, and this is what I firmly believe. When you take away resources, you don't have the ability to stand your ground. You have to accept what's there. So mm-hmm. the more that you take away, the less that you're going to fight, because you have to hold on to what you have left. And when you eradicate the middle class, when you move away from the middle class, it reminds me very, very, very much of a system that was in place from roughly 1917 up until 1991.
You're going to have to help me with that.
Soviet-style communism.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
There was the poor, and there was the government.
Yeah.
And those that could play the game wound up either being in the government or being protected by the government. And everybody else was left to languish. And you're seeing more and more the people that have the resources to leave are leaving. Washington, I think, just above Oregon in exodus to Idaho.
Yes. I really think that as we look at what cap and tax is going to do, it has definitely that ability for us to lose business in Washington State. And then the burden of the budget that this Democrat Party will pass falls on the shoulders of us, the people in Washington State.
Has the legislature been noticing that the industry that's been doing a lot to prop the majority party up is hemorrhaging jobs? That Google and Amazon and Microsoft have all talked about significant layoffs into the tens of thousands?
Seattle area alone, it's over 2,200.
Yeah, just exactly.
Microsoft.
Amazon has announced pausing that second headquarters in Virginia. Okay, mm-hmm. they're pausing that project. People are wondering if the project here is going to move forward. The tech sector, which has been propping up the majority party in this state, is suffering right now. So,
oh yeah.
So who's gonna be the daddy when their bounce back is difficult? And if Republicans get the Senate in the next cycle, big tech's going to have a little bit more of a headache than they currently have, because they're going to see regulation come down the pike. Mm-hmm. And then that's going to wind up hurting them even more in this state. So at some point in time, there has to be an understanding and a reconciliation to do what's in the best interest of the state and not what they tend to lash at more often than not. And that is the figmented 1%.
Yeah,
that figmented 1% is who's propping them up right now, and when they're gone, it's going to be the rest of the state, and the damage done economically is going to hurt this state for a long time. And I don't think I'm creating a pipe dream here.
No, I think we're seeing it right now. When I was listening to the radio, when I was on the west side coming up and over, they were talking about how many businesses downtown in Seattle have disappeared. Mm-hmm. Big. We're talking big businesses.
Mm-hmm.
They're gone. It's because of policies that have been passed.
And the crime, I remember a couple of weeks ago, Brandy Cruz, who used to work for
Fox 13.
She left, but she took a camera and block after block after block, downtown Seattle, empty, 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 empty. Yep. I mean, it's stunning. As somebody that is a Washington State native, and we used to go over there a lot, they're not really, it's people like her that are showing you. And when you see, you know, Nike closed, Starbucks closed one of their flagship stores. Now, granted, just a coffee store, but it was one of their legendary stores. Nike, who else?
The Nike stores, Nike even, I think, if I remember hearing correctly, offered to pay police. Security. They offered to pay for the police, the overtime hours or whatever it would be to
keep the store open.
Yeah. Did Amazon move out?
I know they were talking about it, but I don't know.
I thought relocated to Bellevue, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it was Amazon.
They had a large building in Seattle, and they've moved a lot of people, kind of just quietly moved a lot of people outside the city limits. And then who was another? Was it Target? Or no, that was Portland, where they were closing the Walmart. But I think Target closed a store inside Seattle, too, because they're... What do you call it? The shrink or whatever?
Yeah, shrink. It's
the shrink became unacceptable, and
there's an amount that retailers will look at. And they have an acceptable percentage for shrink, which is loss of inventory. They have an acceptable percentage each quarter, each year. When that number gets out of hand, when you're losing that you cannot even come close to getting back,
then you make changes,
and that's what happened in Portland. When Walmart said sayonara to the last two in the city limits.
But I think Target did that in Seattle, too.
Might have.
And then when you throw in the impacts that this has on, for example, I don't know how the Seattle School District is still operating.
Okay, right now, I know that they're talking about consolidation. I've been listening to a lot of schools being consolidated. I was listening to that on the radio, too, and
I think
there's a lot
seven,
of people.
Upset. Start
well, we've lost 40,000 students in public schools because of... They can say COVID, it's the policies.
Yeah. They're starting, I think there's seven elementary and middle schools that are going to consolidate first. And that's the snowball.
Yep.
And education was supposed to be a priority for Republicans, but we haven't seen the majority party who, you know, talks about education. Well, what they really mean is WEA, when they talk about
education. Well, like Reichdahl.
Okay, we have a lot of COVID-19 funds out there.
We do.
That should be spent on tutoring and helping these children catch up to where they're going. I don't know. I can't remember what bill it was, but I believe there was one there, and I don't know if it died or not. I cannot remember. I think I was a co-sponsor on it. I hate to say that if I can't remember the bill. But...
So you were given a good shot to pass then?
Yeah, I probably. So this is what we need to do is get those kids caught up so we don't have this hemorrhaging in our school system.
Mm-hmm. I know, because we heard so much last October and November where Reichdahl was his wish list, but it was all free lunch, free school supplies, freebies. You know, here's your gift bag. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a lot of we're gonna invest in infrastructure so we can train these kids to do this. We're gonna invest in tutoring. We're gonna put, you know, kids in front of books and computers and have them actually learning. It was all free lunch, free supplies, toys.
Yeah.
But I heard very little from him about here's some programs that are going to put, you know, maybe we have intensive summer school. We're going to get kids in front of the Google Chromebooks and have them catch up, if you will. There wasn't a lot of that. It was all spend on the food.
Well, we will keep an eye out on what goes on because the budgetary cycle is going to kick up here very shortly. Huge thanks to Senator Perry Dozier for hanging out with us this afternoon. Appreciate it. Always enjoy the time.
Thanks. I love being in studio with you guys. You got me going. I'm going to have a great hour drive home.